All right, this is Pure Decking, show number 487 for Thursday, July the 14th, 1099. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and wondering if I should just buy a real fucking clown horn rather than using the soundboard. It might work better, sound better, I don't know. Anyways.
Only if it comes with a little car.
Because what cars cost these days, it might be the best way to get one. It's like, what are you buying, a horn with a car attached to get around tax purposes? Oh, for fuck's sake.
Look, I could fit 30 people in this smart car.
They're not very happy about it because we had to remove all of their arms and legs, but we fit them in there.
It will travel 30 people to a car.
Hey, we got to use the carpool lane.
I've got to tell a story now because you said the carpool lane and 30 people to a car. Years ago when I was working for a plastics company, we had the South plant manager who, as a gag, because he turned, this is his birthday. How old did the guy turn at the time? 50, I want to say. One of the gag gifts they got him was one of those cheap Spencer's blow-up dolls. And he put it in the front passenger seat of his car so he could use the passenger lanes, or the carpool lanes.
Because we meant modern solutions.
I mean, because you go in out to check something in the plant, you see the damn thing strapped into the car, and you're like, did you strap that to your car? He goes, oh yeah, that way nobody hassles me about using the carpool lanes. It's just like, son of a bitch.
Good idea.
And of course, you know, it's like the grossest looking things. It's just like, oh God.
Innovative solution. I'll hand it to the guy.
Yeah.
Made everybody else have to look at it in the parking lot, so it's just like, well, I guess that's what you do when somebody gives you a gag gift. So.
I'll also question shaking his hand in the future.
Or leaving small barn animals with him.
I mean, because it's like, Jesus, I wouldn't want something that looks like that in the car. My God. It'd be distracting. It's like every time you turn to look and see if somebody's in your lane, you want to duck for cover. It's like, what the fuck, man? But, anyways, I guess we can get right into it here. First one I have is from, WNYT.com. No, I haven't been drinking the bourbon. Why do you ask? And, this is the ex-CIA engineer convicted. So, a former CIA software engineer was convicted Wednesday on federal charges accusing him of the biggest theft of classified information in CIA history. Joshua Schult, who chose to defend himself at a New York trial, New York City retrial, chose to defend himself. That's never a good idea. From everything I've read, you know, lawyers practice this special secret language and handshakes to each other. So, representing yourself is usually never going to go well.
I've heard a lawyer that defends himself has a fool for a client is a popular statement.
So, in a New York City retrial, had told jurors in closing arguments that the CIA and the FBI made him a scapegoat for an embarrassing public release of a trove of CIA secrets in WikiLeaks or by WikiLeaks in 2017. Schult watched without visibly reacting as U.S. District Judge Jesse M. Furman announced the guilty verdict on 9 counts, which was reached in mid-afternoon by a jury that had deliberated since Friday. The so-called Vault 7 leak revealed how the CIA hacked Apple and Android smartphones in overseas spying operations and in efforts to turn internet-connected televisions into listening devices. Prior to his arrest, Schult had helped create the hacking tools as a coder at the agency's headquarters in Langley, Virginia. A sentencing date was not immediately set, but Schult still awaits trial on processing or on charges of possessing and transporting child pornography. He has pled not guilty. You know, whenever somebody's accused of conspiracy, it's always they always, you know, they're always charged with kiddie porn. It's just like, I mean, every fucking time. Also, guys, this is why you don't let your employees use flash drives on your work machines, and you make them use separate machines for work stuff versus personal stuff. You don't let people copy the code base because, you know, especially if you're an organization that might have political interactions, somebody might just take it upon themselves to do something with that copy of the code base. So... attorney Sabrina Schroff, who advised Schultz during the trial, told Schultz's mother after the verdict that the outcome was a kick to the gut, the brain, and the heart. And it's unclear if Schroff was expressing her own sentiments or Schultz. In his closing, Schultz claims he was singled out, even though hundreds of people had access to the information, hundreds of people could have stolen it. The government's case is riddled with reasonable doubt, he added. There's simply no motive here. Prosecutors allege the 33-year-old Schultz was motivated to orchestrate the leak because he believed the CIA had disrespected him by ignoring his complaints about the work environment. So he tried, quote, to burn to the ground, unquote, the very work he had helped to the agency to create, they said. Assistant U.S. Attorney David Denton encouraged jurors to consider evidence of an attempted cover-up, including a list of chores Schultz drew up that had an entry reading, quote, delete suspicious emails. He put delete suspicious emails on a to-do list? For fuck's sake! I mean...
Either he's incompetent or his framers were really, really...
I mean, it's like, oh, look, here it is on the calendar. Bury the bodies. I mean, what the fuck? Who does that?
A little too convenient, one may think.
U.S. Attorney Damian Williams said in a statement that Schultz was convicted of, quote, one of the most brazen and damaging acts of espionage in American history, unquote. Williams said Schultz, motivated by resentment towards the CIA, leaked to the public and the U.S. adversary some of the nation's, quote, most valuable intelligence-gathering cyber tools used to battle terrorist organizations and other malign influences around the globe. What they're leaving out is that they were software flaws that anybody could exploit, not just them. The CIA had this... they had a policy that they tried to implement called NOBUS, which stood for Nobody But Us. So they honestly believed that they were the only ones capable of exploiting a lot of these software vulnerabilities. We know that's not true, but they believed it. And so that's how they operated. I mean...
But if the flaw's there, then doesn't anyone that know about the flaw able to use the flaw? Well, it's like my front door. If I know there's a front door there, I can go through it along with everybody else.
I mean, it depends on the flaw. If your front door is 2 feet tall and a foot wide, I mean, you might be able to eventually go through it, but it's going to be a lot of work with a chainsaw versus, you know, a front door that's a mile wide and 7 feet tall. Well, anybody can go through that. Well, I don't know. If it's a mile wide opening, it might be interesting. But you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So in this
some
case...
Some flaws would take tools to get into, but...
Some of these flaws, attacking them requires huge amounts of infrastructure. If you were going to do some of the more difficult encryption-based attacks where you are actually trying to crack the crypto itself, look for flaws in the crypto, you need huge amounts of resources to do that research. And so that is something where you could reasonably assume it's going to be a government agency or nobody. I mean, maybe like a Google or an Apple might have or Microsoft might have the resources to do that kind of research. But if it's like, you know, a bad string parsing flaw or, you know, memory buffer overflow, use after free errors, poor input sanitization, anybody's going to find that shit. And some of the flaws they were exploiting in that Team 17 release or whatever it was, if I remember right, a lot of them were just simple code flaws, things that anybody who, like, would fuzz the things would find. So the problem I have is not this idea of the Nobis philosophy. It's that their definition of it the bar was set far too low. So, now, did this guy do it? I don't know. They convicted him of it, so I'm kind of inclined to think he might have, and they might have had more to it. But, I mean, when somebody has a to-do list that says delete suspicious emails, that's just like, I mean, God, that looks like a plant.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks like something out of, like, a bad, like, John Grisham novel or something, right? I mean, come on.
Now, we're thinking this because we think people can't be that stupid. Now, think of the people you've worked with.
Well, what's the old George Carlin joke? Think of the how stupid the average person is and realize that, you know, that's the average. Half the people are dumber than that. So.
Yeah. Though, I could see somebody either thinking no one's going to believe this if they find it, that I would be this stupid and just name it that for fun. Or people just being dumb and naming it that.
Well, I mean, I could absolutely see naming stuff like that for fun. I used to really have fun when they demanded I put an update summary into a policy document at work a couple of years back because I didn't remember what I had changed because it had been one of those things where I had worked on it fairly late and I had made a lot of changes to it. It's like, well, just summarize what you changed. And I'm like, I don't know. Removed curse words and racist language. And I left that in a document for about a week, and somebody saw it. So it's just one of these things. It's like, what was in that policy document? It's like nothing. I was being silly. But we had a compliance guy who demanded a changes summary in there. So I put that in there, and they accepted it. Because it's like, oh, okay.
He doesn't know what you changed, and this is what you said you changed.
So, I mean, yeah, I could see putting goofy shit like that in a to-do list as a gag. You know, just something you do to chuckle at yourself. But if you're working at the CIA, you probably would know better. Well, maybe not. You'd like to think. Let's see, where were we with the story? Prosecutor said Schultz knew the leak would render the CIA's tools essentially useless, having a devastating effect on our intelligence community by providing critical intelligence to those who wish to do us harm. You mean software companies who could patch the holes? Because that's basically what happened. While behind bars awaiting trial, prosecutor said he continued his crimes by trying to leak additional classified materials as he carried on a, quote, information war, unquote, against the government. If he's behind bars, how is he... I've got problems with that one. I've got problems with that. It's like, how are you trying to continue to leak if you're locked up? I mean, they're not giving you access to a fucking laptop. Once the jury left the courtroom for deliberations, the judge complimented Schultz on his closing argument. Mr. Schultz, that was impressively done, Furman said. Depending on what happens here, you may have a future as a defense lawyer. A mistrial was declared at Schultz's original 2020 trial after jurors deadlocked on the most serious counts, including illegal gathering and transmission of national defense information. Schultz told the judge last year he wanted to serve as his own attorney for the retrial. He has not announced whether he wants to represent himself at his next trial, which involves alleging allegations that after leaving the CIA, Schultz moved from New York to Virginia with a computer that contained images and videos of child pornography that he had downloaded from the internet from 2009 to March 2017. Schultz has been held behind bars without bail since 2018. Last year, he complained in court papers that he was the victim of cruel and unusual punishment, awaiting the two trials in solitary confinement inside a vermin-infested cell of a jail unit where inmates are treated like caged animals. So... There's definitely some bullshit going on with this trial, but at the same time, this guy's screaming about every little thing and representing himself at a trial. So, I don't know.
Well, we got a mistrial on one. I'm going to say kudos. Apparently, he's not as bad as I thought.
I mean... Again, just for me, this goes back to this is why you don't let your employees move data out of your company network. I mean, for Christ's sake, Mad Men, I remember you talking about, you know, some of your early positions where you work today, and of course we don't want to say where you work, but like you said, people got fired for pulling out their cell phones.
Oh yeah, they took nothing. You cannot record anything. USB ports were disabled. There were no optical drives. I mean, it was, this is secure. And once you enter this area of the building, you don't have your cell phone out. If you're expecting some call, you let management know. And once you get it, you get up and get away from any screens because there's no recording anything.
Well, I remember when the company I work at, you know, merged with another company and they had much stricter requirements on things. You know, I went in because I had some things on devices that, I mean, I used them for work. I treated them as work devices, even though they were really mine. And I'm like, here's what's on this. Here's what's on this. And here's what's on this old server that you know, they were going to trash and I decided to take home. And, I'm on the flipping security team, right? So, you know, they knew I wasn't fucking around, and I'm like, I want to clean this stuff properly, and then I want to sign attestations that I've done so, because I don't want there to be any question. Because I don't want anyone to think I have company data on anything that is personal. And so we did.
I'm kind of surprised when you got the server even from the old company that it had hard drives in it.
They didn't think it did. They had removed the drives from the front panel, and when I opened it up to see what I could do with it, it had two other drives in there. Fairly sizable, too. A couple 200 gigs drives at the time. That was a nice find. So
it wasn't necessarily a flaw in policy. It was a flaw in implementation.
Yeah, it was you know, because they were going to chuck it in the trash. I'm like, I'll take that. And, of course, when I opened it up, looking to see what I could do with it. Turned out it was a appliance level server with a little rinky dink processor in it. And really the hard drive that was in it was about the only thing worth a damn. It was all in a custom format. And I just ran it through D-Man a couple of times and made a note of it and sent an email to my boss. That's what it was. And, you know, what do you want to do? And she said, oh, well, you said you D-Manned it? Yep. It's like, okay. So, Part of the thing is they know I ain't going to do anything with it, but I still signed an attestation that I had done so. I wanted to. I actually wanted to create the documentation that I had had it, and this is what I did with it. Because, again, I didn't want there to be any question. I wanted it to be, you know, any airtight, any questions or gaps, you know what I mean? So, but most people don't understand why that separation is so important. So, and given what I've been doing lately, the number of people I've been working with who treat company equipment as personal machines, or worse, use personal machines to do work on, it's not fun, because then you end up having to sort out what's what and people get really upset about it.
Oh, and if you're doing stuff on personal machines, then you're also, if security ever needs to audit your machine, everything personal that you've touched, they have reason to look at. If you checked your personal email, they have reason to check that to see, did you stick any company-related info in this?
And
so you're opening up your entire personal life to them looking at everything that you have.
You know what really makes it awkward? When you're talking to somebody who used to own the company that your company just bought, and they've got all this stuff spread across that's not related to what you bought. And then there's a question, because the contract said you purchased the computers involved in the business. And they're like, well, I use this for multiple businesses. And then you've got to get the lawyers involved as to whether or not, oh my God, is that a pain in the ass? And yes, we've had to do this a couple of times lately, where the lawyers have to get involved and we're arguing about who owns a machine because the language in the contract didn't list it out specifically. It just said things like all machines associated with the business. And then you're mad at the lawyers of, why didn't you ask for a fucking inventory and put it in the contract? But
with that statement, if the dude answered a business email on that machine, it belongs to you.
Well, they came up with a compromise because it was a it was an interesting situation where that the owner of that particular business basically tried to sell the business and keep it. It was very strange, but they came up with a compromise that basically you send us the machine, we'll wipe it and send it back to you. So he's going to get his machine back blank. But yeah, I mean, it's just one of these things. So, because he was saying, well, I spent $4,000 on some high-end Mac, right? It's like, I don't want to have to go buy another one. It's like, but you sold it to us. It's like, no, I didn't. Yeah, you did. It's right there in the corner. This is why I get to say, hey, that goes to legal counsel, and when they tell me what to do, I'll do what they say, because I don't want to deal with that shit. You know, one point in my life, I wanted to be in charge of every decision. I've since learned what folly that was.
I'll let somebody else make everyone pissed off. I just want to go in and do my job.
Many days, man. Many days. What do you think, are you?
I'm just sitting back, enjoying the story, man. Like, how fucking stupid. You know? To not take inventory. How much do these lawyers make per hour?
A lot.
And they couldn't even think, well, maybe we should, you know, inventory everything on there.
Oh, they like loose language because that gives them a lot of leeway.
Yeah. But, dude, you're talking multi-million dollar companies.
More than that.
Yeah, I know, man. It's a lot of money. But, yeah. Failure at that level. And there are many more levels above that. You know, I'm starting to really worry.
Well, it's, you know, when I first started in my career, I thought the people at the top of the company must be special. They must know things I don't know. They must understand things. As you get up there, no. They're just like everybody else. They just somehow got in that position. It's like you kind of wonder. It's like, wait a minute, aren't they, you know, they're in management. They're the ones in charge. Shouldn't they be like, you know, smart? No, I guess not. Okay, well.
Yeah. They might just get along with people, and the dude that was their boss liked working with them, so promoted him up as he went up.
We've got a couple of people like, I know a couple of managers like that, and they're making key technical decisions, and they have no right to be making those decisions, because they make them wrong a lot.
Yeah.
Whew. So. Next one up is from Como News. This is all over the place. This article is just short. Amazon has provided Ring doorbell footage to law enforcement 11 times this year without the user's permission. A revelation that's bound to raise more privacy and civil liberty concerns about its video sharing agreements with police departments across the country. The disclosure came in a letter from the company that was made public Wednesday by U.S. Senator Ed Markey, a Massachusetts Democrat who sent a separate letter to Amazon last month questioning Ring's surveillance practices and engagement with law enforcement. Ring has said before it would not share customer information with police without consent, a warrant, or due to, quote, an accident or emergency circumstance, unquote. The 11 videos shared this year fell under the emergency provision. Amazon's letter said the first time the company publicly shared such information. Oh, okay, this is just poorly written. I was like, that didn't make sense. No, it's just it fell under the emergency provision, quote, comma, Amazon's letter said, comma, the first time the company's publicly shared this such information. That's a hell of a compound sentence there. Editors, for fuck's sake. The letter, dated July the 1st, did not say which videos were shared with the police. Brian Hoosman, Amazon's vice president for public policy, wrote in the letter that in each instance, quote, Ring made a good faith determination that there was an imminent danger of death or serious physical injury to a person requiring disclosure of information without delay, unquote. In such cases, Huseman wrote, Ring, quote, reserves the right to respond immediately to urgent law enforcement requests for information, unquote, adding the company makes a determination as to when to share the video footage without user consent based on information provided to it in an emergency request form and circumstances described by law enforcement. Some prior requests from law enforcement have raised concerns about how police might be attempting to use Ring footage. Last year, the nonprofit digital rights group Electronic Frontier Foundation reported that the Los Angeles Police Department requested ring footage of Black Lives Matter protests in 2020. Well, if you've seen the online videos of that, you can understand why they might have been doing that. In his statement, Markey's office said the findings show a close relationship between Ring and law enforcement and a proliferation of police using the platform. Okay, I'm going to stop there for a second. Anybody who's ever worked for a company with lawyers will tell you, if they keep legal counsel, they will tell you, you do silver policy platter, or, you know, silver platter policy. If the police come to you, you cooperate with them as much as possible, because what you do not want is your company in court being held responsible for something a customer or somebody tangential to you did. So, it's like, well, what's the close relationship between Ring and law enforcement? That's law enforcement going to Ring and demanding stuff. I guarantee that's how that happened. Ring wasn't reaching out to law enforcement. Because Ring is owned by Amazon. Amazon, I know, has lawyers. They're not just going to offer shit up to the police because of the kind of liability that creates. So, not that I'm saying Amazon is faultless here. I'm just saying it's not quite as, oh my God, look what Amazon's doing. It's look what the police are making Amazon do. It's how this should be read. I mean, anybody, Madman, you work for a company with lawyers. You want to dispute any of that?
Oh, no. And the one time I was involved with the FBI showing up, it was help them out, and our lawyers will deal with anything in court that we weren't supposed to give them.
The couple of times I've had to do it, the lawyers are sitting there with me reviewing everything before we did it. So it's just like... It's not fun, man. It's not. So, Amazon said in its letter, 2,161 law enforcement agencies are enrolled in Ring's Neighbors app, a forum for residents to share suspicious videos captured by their home security cameras. Okay, that's got to be like state and county agencies, because I'm just sitting there thinking 2,161 law enforcement agencies. And my mind goes to the federal government. It's like there's no way there's that many law enforcement agencies.
Each individual sheriff's office.
I know.
Yeah.
It's just the way I read that, what popped in my head was like, that can't be right. There can't be that many. But yeah.
Where you are, there'd be like the city police, the state police, and the sheriff's department. That's three of them right off the bat.
And the county. So,
county's usually sheriff. I guess some counties might be big enough they have their own police department, but usually it's sheriff.
Actually, around where I am, a lot of the counties have their own independent agencies and even government offices, because there's people living out in a lot of rural areas that's not really incorporated into a town. So they all fall under county, so... quote, as my ongoing investigation at Amazon illustrates, it has become increasingly difficult for the public to move, assemble, and converse in public without being tracked and recorded, unquote, Markey said in a statement. Among others, the senator's statements also criticized the company for not clarifying the distance Ring products can capture audio recordings. The company has said in its response letter that what Ring captures, quote, depends on many conditions, including device placement and environmental... Well, yeah, anybody who's ran sound recording knows that. the Ring disclosure comes as Amazon is facing broader antitrust scrutiny in Congress about its e-commerce business and accusations of undercutting merchants that sell on its platform by making, quote, knockoffs, unquote, or very similar products, boosting their presence on its site. Okay, so what Amazon does, almost everything on Amazon is made in China. Well, China... I mean, their relationship with intellectual property and trademark laws is shaky at best. So what Amazon does is they see a product becoming popular on Amazon. And they've got the stats to prove it because, you know, they're running the platform.
They're right? The ones selling it.
Yeah. So they'll decide, well, hey, we can get in on this. So they'll go to the same manufacturers who make the same damn thing and make the, quote, Amazon Basics version. And then they'll undercut by, you know, 2%. All the other brands, they'll mark that as the Amazon recommended version and put it up there. And it's the same stuff. It's coming out of the same factory. It's made, but probably made by the same people. It's just got an Amazon brand slapped on it rather than, you know, whatever Chinese brand or whatever American brand that's been rebranding, because all of it's made in Chinese factories, and Chinese factories don't care. As you know, you say, "Hey, make me that," and they're like, "Okay." So that's, and Amazon has been doing that. They've gotten caught doing it multiple times, and I know they just had it. There was another story. I don't have it, but apparently they just reached an agreement with the EU to back off on this because it's it's raising antitrust concerns pretty badly. So at this point, I'm just kind of waiting for the antitrust cases against Amazon, Google, and Facebook to, well, Meta, I guess, and Alphabet. I mean, hell, Google's got some things out where they're talking about moving their advertising business out of the Google brand because of antitrust concerns. So, I mean, it's just a matter of time before you start seeing, you know, antitrust cases against these companies. I don't know
when they go after Google, they're not going after Google; they're going after Alphabet.
Well, yeah, they're the only company, but that's why I corrected myself. But I have a feeling that. I'm not sure it would matter if they try to break them up. Because that's going to be what the government wants to do. So they're going to want to split them up along business lines. So, oh, the advertising business is one thing, and the search business, and YouTube, and you know all the other shit Google owns. You know, if they go after Facebook, they'll want to split it up. Or Meta, they'll want to split it back up into separate, you know, brands, Instagram, Facebook, the Oculus, right? You know, if they go after Amazon, they'll want to split it up by business division. You know, the hosting services, they'll want to split the stores up. I don't know how that will go, and I don't even know if I want them to do that because, you know, if you try to split Facebook up back into the separate, you know, social media networks, it's going to be the whole AT&T reform, you know, split up and reforming thing over and over again, right? And I don't know that you're really going to accomplish anything other than just wasting a lot of money and effort. But it would be kind of fun to see some of these tech companies get the antitrust treatment because, at least by the original definitions, most of them qualify. So.
I could see breaking up on business line, at least with Alphabet possibly doing something, because how is their search engine going to function without the ad revenue from their advertising? Because I would split those two up. I'd say your ad company is separate from your search engine.
Well, the search engine doesn't generate any revenue. The search engine's a vehicle to carry the ads. That's the business model. Well, I don't know. If they take paid placement, and I think they do because that's what those top links always are. And so,
Google search is terrible now, anyway.
Oh yeah, and you start with Google and then you move off to DuckDuckGo or even Bing or Cirex if you want to find something. It is interesting to compare.
There's too much pay to play with Google now that they're no longer worth it.
It is interesting to compare the results across different search engines and see what you get. So,
yeah, they're definitely interesting, but the pay-to-play model that Google has actually destroyed their search engine.
Yeah. Well, there was another article that apparently they were saying most millennials are using Instagram and TikTok for search, not Google. The article itself was kind of pedantic and complaining that kids are stupid, so I didn't really think it was worth including in the show, but it's just interesting.
How the fuck would you use TikTok?
I don't know.
For search. What is functional on TikTok?
Did I misremember it? Let me find the article again.
I'm not having a go at you, man.
I may have misremembered it.
I'm just like, Jesus, like, what are you looking up? You know, dances that'll help the Ukrainians win? You know, the only...
possible. People are idiots.
Intergalactic space numbers for happiness? I have no clue.
Yeah, here it is. It's from Business Insider. Nearly half of Gen Z is using TikTok and Instagram for search instead of Google, according to Google's data. Well, the only thing you're searching for on there is videos on those platforms. Or I guess Instagram's photos. Does Instagram
so
do
there's
videos?
TikTok videos on how to change fucking motor oil?
They count searching for different videos as searches.
I don't really want to dive into it too much, but there's the link if you want to. I'm not going to put it in the show notes, but I'll throw it in the IRC and then the.
That's one reason for a while. YouTube was one of the largest search engines.
I get what you're saying. Yeah. So they're just looking for other retarded videos.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, they're going to look for somebody screaming politics that they like, or lip syncing to a song, or, you know,
yeah,
you know, searching for tits. I mean, so. Anyways, next article, or you sent me this one, it's from the BBC. Lo-fi girl, YouTube, sorry for taking down music stream. Come on. YouTube has said sorry for taking down two of its most popular music streams in response to a bogus copyright claim. The Lo-fi Girl channel, famous for its anime-inspired thumbnail, plays relaxing hip-hop music on a loop as a stunning sleep aid. On Sunday, its creator announced that its radios had been silenced after 2 years of continuous streaming, sparking outcry from fans. Part of what's interesting about this to me is the fact that a guy was basically running YouTube live streams as a radio station.
Yeah.
You know, continuously keep
too.
I mean, yeah. I mean, there's no reason you can't. It's just interesting that he was treating it more as an always-on live stream, you know, like a radio station than like a live stream where you hop on, do something for a few hours, and hop off or whatever it is, you know, you play games or, again, I'm assuming the two things you do on live streams are play games or flash tits. I mean, that's basically what people do on live streams, right?
Don't watch them.
I'm going to go with yes.
Okay, usually they're not flashing their tits. They're almost flashing their tits because terms of service, right? But, I mean, isn't that the whole chicks in hot tubs thing or whatever it was?
I've been into.
The whole bathwater thing?
Yeah. It's like, huh, I once thought about being a live streamer, but then I realized I didn't have the tits for it, so. Where was I with the article? YouTube has since confirmed the original claim was abusive. Lo-Fi Girl has built up 10 million subscribers with its regularly updated mixes of low-fidelity instrumental music, not industrial. it has inspired countless memes, Halloween costumes, and even a quarantine parody version by Will Smith. They actually put in the article Oscar-winning actor Will Smith. I think they're lampooning on him.
Wow.
The channel's two streams, Beats to Relax / Study To and Beats to Chill Sleep To, have almost 800 million combined views and have racked up 21,000 hours of playtime. When both went down, fans were quick to assume it meant the death of a, quote, hugely important part of YouTube culture. One wrote, Lo-Fi Girl has helped me survive so many stressful study times. Okay. I loved watching live and knowing many people were listening too. Guys, IceCast has been a thing for hell. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but, you know, used to just load up Winamp with the playlist that was several days long and let it go. I mean,
don't frighten the children, Morps.
I mean, we used to keep MP3 files on the computer, for God's sake. I still do. I actually bought an MP3 player that's not my phone just for doing stuff like this because the phones have made it harder and harder to do things that aren't streaming. So,
yep.
I mean, Apple will go through on a Mac will actually delete your local music and say, oh, we've got the cloud version for you. We saw you owned that, so we just deleted it to save you some hard drive space, and now it's in Apple Music for you. It's like, the fuck?
What if I'm going through somewhere with no signal? What if you decided I don't own that one day?
At least it asked before it started clearing out my file server, because I booted up a Mac and it flipping tried.
Wow. That's
It started that's to, because I was mapping some drives, and it said, Apple Music has detected this music. Would you like to save disk space and, you know, use the cloud versions? Like, fuck you, no!
Oh, that is really obnoxious.
Well, a lot of people found that out the hard way, because they added the whole ask because of that. Rats in the IRC says there's a Winamp clone on PC I love made by a Russian guy. I still install the last versions of Winamp on a lot of my machines. What's the Russian version you're talking about, man? And yeah, there's a guy with live recordings of a deceased artist that he was playing with. Mac deleted the rare recordings in AAMP. Yeah, I have to look at that. I think we did that story on Decade.
Yeah, we did that story. It's starting to, yeah.
Where Apple deleted, because the guy had all these live recordings, but he had managed to name them the same as the tracks. Yeah. Audio scrub is the waveform, huh? AIMP. Enjoy the music. AIMP.ru. Huh. Interesting looking. Doesn't look like Winamp. Has it got a Winamp skin? Because, you know. Oh, they do have skins. Here we go. Keywords. Winamp. I'm just. Sony Media Tower Reward. MMD3. Oh, they've got that's an old Winamp skin that somebody's reworked. Yeah. They've got some of the old Winamp skins reworked. Contrast, which is an old Winamp skin. What'd this guy do? Fork Winamp?
Nice.
Interesting. There's the link in TeamSpeak if you guys want to see it. I think I screwed up and put a plus at the end of there because my numpad has buttons and my fingers are large.
I'll tuck that away for a rainy day.
Yeah, something to look at. Well, I didn't have a dojo for today, so maybe we'll say that's the dojo and thank rats for it. So
there you go. Done.
Nice. We'll just add that to the show notes as the dojo. So it shows bitrate, bunch of nerdy shit. Well, hey, nerdy shit's good if you're actually doing... If you're managing your own MP3s today, you probably want the nerdy shit.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people don't. They just... Spotify or Apple Music or YouTube or whatever. They don't...
They don't get terabytes of music.
Yeah. So pretty much what this was when Lo-Fi Girl went down was somebody issued false copyright claims. Because on YouTube, it's just... I mean, you know, I was looking at doing some videos for 3D printing and some other stuff, and I, of course, you know, had a lot of shit happen this year that's kind of kept me from doing it, but part of it is I'm not sure if I want to or not, because not even the platform itself is a problem, but just there's so much bullshit on there. False copyright claims. Apparently people blackmail you for your channel. It's like, we'll claim copyright if you don't give us money. There's also a scam with channels that get popular where it's like because you can set your name to whatever you want, they'll say, oh, I'm the official version of it. And hey, they'll go in the comments section and say, we're running a contest. Go fill out this form with your, you know, credit card and mother's maiden name and social security number, and you might win a Fortnite gift card or some bullshit, right? So it's like, I don't know, man. I don't know if it's worth diving into that or not anymore. So, but Rat says it's a good player, so we'll throw that in the dojo link for tonight. The article goes on kind of explaining the abuse of copyright claims, but next article, this one's from Tech Explorer, and yes, I'm speeding up because I just saw the clock. Former bosses of Fukushima operator ordered to pay $97 billion in damages.
I care for writer check.
Do what?
A Tokyo court on Wednesday ordered former this is very tangential for dojo, but or for decking, but I just I Wow. A Tokyo court on Wednesday ordered former executives from the operator of the devastated Fukushima nuclear plant to pay 13.32 trillion yen, or about $97 billion, for failing to prevent the disaster, plaintiff said.
How do you fail to prevent an earthquake? Wait a minute. How do you prevent an earthquake? Because I know how you fail. You just, you know, be alive.
Four ex-bosses from the Tokyo Electric Power Company were ordered to pay the damages in a suit brought by shareholders over the nuclear disaster triggered by a massive tsunami in 2011. Plaintiffs emerged from the Tokyo court holding banners reading "Shareholders win and responsibility recognized." Lawyers from the plaintiffs hailed the ruling. They said they believed it to be the largest amount of compensation ever awarded in a civil lawsuit in Japan. I don't know that that's just in Japan.
Yeah, and I don't know that it's a good thing.
quote, nuclear power plants can cause irreparable damage to human lives and the environment, unquote, the plaintiff said in a separate statement after the ruling. Quote, executive for firms that operate such nuclear plants bear enormous responsibility, which cannot compare to that of other companies, unquote. The shareholders argued that the disaster could have been prevented if TEPCO bosses had listened to research and carried out preventative measures like placing an emergency power source on higher ground. Defendants said the studies were not credible and that the risks were unpredictable. But the court ruled nuclear plant operators have, quote, an obligation to prevent severe accidents based on the latest scientific and expert engineering knowledge, unquote, said the, and the executives failed to heed credible warnings. Or weren't these things like 10 years past their planned life?
I was going to say 10 years past their use-by date. Survived the largest earthquake ever recorded in history, plus a tsunami, and only had a mild radiation leak?
And they still could have been safely shut down, but officials chose not to because they didn't want to handle the largest tsunami and earthquake response without power.
Yeah, I'd say that was a success.
Well, those officials who chose not to shut the plant down are the ones that are, I think, the ones who are being sued here.
I didn't hear governor, mayor, or prefect. I heard the heads of the nuclear plant.
Okay. In a statement read to AFP by TEPCO spokesman, the firm declined to comment on the ruling, saying only, quote, we again express our heartfelt apology to the people in Fukushima and members of society broadly for causing trouble and worry, unquote, with the disaster. The damages are intended to cover the costs to TEPCO for dismantling the reactors, compensating affected residents, and cleaning up contamination. The lawsuit is designed so that the money will go to TEPCO itself, which the plaintiffs own partially as shareholders. Hiroki Kawai, a lawyer with representing the plaintiffs, called the decision historic. Quote, listen to what this guy fucking says. Quote, we realize that 13 trillion yen is well beyond their capability to pay, unquote, he told reporters, adding that the plaintiffs expect the men to pay as much as their assets allow. In other words, we're going to take every penny you got. There was no immediate word on whether the executives would appeal, although the plaintiff's legal team insisted, quote, if they have heart to feel regret, they should deeply apologize to residents and follow the judgment without appealing, unquote. They're literally calling them bad people if they appeal. It's like, oh, you're going to exercise your legal rights? You're a bad person. It's like, damn. Three of Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plants, plant six reactors, were operating when a massive undersea quake triggered a devastating tsunami in March 11th of 2011. They went into meltdown after their cooling systems failed when waves flooded backup generators, leading to the worst nuclear disaster since Chernobyl. Around 12% of the Fukushima region was once declared unsafe, but no-go zones now cover about 2%, although populations in many towns remain far lower than before. TEMCO has been pursued in the courts by survivors of the disaster as well as shareholders. And six plaintiffs this year took the firm to court over claims they developed thyroid cancer because of the radiation exposure. In 2019, a court acquitted three former TEMCO officials in the only criminal trial to stem from the disaster. They were among the four men ordered to pay damages in Wednesday's ruling. Former chairman, Tsushinkya Katsumata, former vice presidents Sake Muto and Ichiro Takekutaro, and former president Masakata Shizumizu? I don't know how to say that. I don't watch enough anime to say these names correctly. The men had faced up to 5 years in prison if convicted of professional negligence resulting in death and injury, but the court ruled that they could not have predicted the scale of the tsunami that triggered the disaster. Kauai said that the shareholder suit was filed in 2011 and that senior managers at TEPCO must be made to pay. Quote, "You may have to sell your house. You may have to spend your retirement years in misery," unquote, he said to them. Quote, "In Japan, nothing can be resolved and no progress can be made without assigning personal responsibility," unquote. TEMCO is currently engaged in a decades-long effort to decommission the plant, and it's a costly and difficult process. No one was killed in the nuclear meltdown, but the tsunami left 18,500 dead or missing.
Yeah, so there's no way is the failure of the plant of all these people dead or missing. I'd say they had a pretty good success.
Well, Rats in the IRC here is saying the tsunami and earthquake fucked up the roads, made it slightly difficult to get fuel trucks there. The batteries kicked in, gave it like 36 hours on the batteries. Might have been 12 hours. The point is they had batteries for long enough under more normal conditions, but the tsunami and earthquakes were kind of tricky to plan around. Yeah, so that is kind of the thing here is they're saying, you know, why didn't you predict that the world was going to end? It's like,
yeah,
you know, if they had preventative measures that would cover a tsunami or an earthquake, but not both, but they still have to hold somebody responsible. I know that's kind of a culture clash thing, the way they talk about it, but it's like the sheer, if you appeal this, you don't have a heart. You know, it's just like, wow.
It's no wonder the judge didn't hand them each a samurai sword and fucking ask him to neck himself.
Well, I'm kind of wondering if that's going to be the next article out of this, right?
Interesting. Anyway, next story.
The next article is one that RU sent me. It's from BBC. This is about the Rogers outage in Canada last week. Canadian mobile and internet giant Rogers says it will give credits to millions of its customers after a nationwide outage last week. In a statement posted late on Tuesday, the firm said that users will receive, quote, the equivalent of 5 days of service, unquote. The outage, which lasted for more than 15 hours, also affected transport, banking, and emergency services. Regulators have ordered the company providing an accounting of why and how the disruption happened. Rogers is one of Canada's largest telecom companies with more than 11 million subscribers. The firm said it had been listening to our customers from across the country who have told us how significant the impacts of the outage were for them, unquote. It said in a tweet that it would credit customers with 5 days worth of service instead of the 2 days it had, previously offered. 5 days worth of service for most people, that's probably what, like $3, $4?
Yeah, it's not much. I just like an explanation on how it happened and not just say it was a glitch.
Quote, "The national outage of the telecom services that millions of Canadians experienced in the last few days is unacceptable, full stop," unquote. Canada's industry minister, Francois Philippe Champagne, said in a tweet on Monday. I know I said that name wrong, but Francois Philippe Champagne. Does it get more French than that? He said he had gathered the leaders of major telecom companies, quote, to demand they take immediate action to improve the resiliency and reliability of our networks, unquote. The Canadian Radio, Television, and Telecommunications Commission, which regulates the sector, said it was seeking, quote, a detailed account from Rogers as to why and how this happened, as well as to what measures Rogers is putting in place to prevent future outages, unquote. Well, they're putting duct tape on the cord so the janitor doesn't trip over it again.
Yeah.
Yeah, this quote, this widespread network outage not only disrupted Canadian and Canadian businesses across the country, it prevented access to services such as 911 and emergency public alerting, as well as other critical infrastructure services, unquote, it added in a statement on Tuesday. The outage began at 4:30 local time last Friday and lasted for more than 15 hours. Most services have now been restored. Chief Executive Tony Saffretti said the outage followed, quote, a maintenance update in our core network, unquote, which, quote, caused some of our routers to malfunction, unquote. Oh, they push bad routes. That'll do it. You push bad routes in your core network, that'll fucking do it.
Yeah, tip it over.
The thing is, it didn't just affect Canada. Tons of websites went down. And it's either because load balancing went through Canada or links went through Canada or just something Rogers did had it routing poorly or, you know, people were publishing bad routing tables as a gag, forcing it to go through Canada. I think there were a few people doing that. That's just me speculating. I don't have evidence that I can admit to. Read that some bank machines were offline during the blackout, when many emergency services phone numbers reported difficulties with incoming calls, and hospitals asked on-call staff to come into work until the issue was resolved. During the outage, people flocked to coffee shops and libraries with functioning Wi-Fi. Three companies, Rogers, Bell Canada, and Telescorp, control 90% of the telecoms market in Canada. Critics say the outage demonstrates need for more competition in the company's telecom sector. No shit. Let's see. Oh, Rats has a YouTube video of a Canadian YouTuber explaining. He's pretty mad. Phantom Freak voice, but he does know things. If you ignore the high-strung energy, he does a good job explaining what happened. Okay. So. Cool. But, so yeah, Canada went offline.
Just all of Canada.
Well, you know, I'm going to make Matt, are you a little mad saying this, but, maybe start learning about radio. more accurately, maybe start learning about how to use services that don't rely on infrastructure.
I'm going to have to figure out what the derogatory term for what you people are is so I can start calling you that.
I believe that would be a sad ham.
technophile may also work.
I mean, I'm not going to dispute it. Just saying, you know, if you've got a way of working that's not dependent on infrastructure, just you know, might be handy to have especially if you've got monopolies running your telecoms. So, anyways, next article is from PBS. Data of more than 40 million exposed in a T-Mobile breach. The names, social security numbers, and information from driver's licenses and other identification of just over 40 million former and prospective customers that applied for T-Mobile credit were exposed in a recent data breach, the company said on Wednesday. The same data for about 7.8 million current T-Mobile postpaid customers appears to have been compromised. No phone numbers, account numbers, PINs, passwords, or financial information from the nearly 50 million records and accounts were compromised, it said. T-Mobile also confirmed that approximately 850,000 active T-Mobile prepaid customer names, phone numbers, and account PINs were exposed. The company said that it proactively reset all the PINs on those accounts. No Metro by T-Mobile, former Sprint prepaid, or Boost customers had their names or PINs exposed. There was also some additional information from inactive prepaid accounts accessed through prepaid billing files. T-Mobile said that no customer financial information, credit card information, debit or other payment information, or social security numbers were in the inactive file. Oh, wait, didn't they say social security numbers were... Yeah, so that's inconsistent. And the announcement comes 2 days after T-Mobile said that it was investigating a leak of its data after someone took to an online forum offering to sell the personal information of cell phone users. The company said Monday that it confirmed there was unauthorized access to some T-Mobile data and that it had closed the entry point used to gain access. The company said that it will immediately offer 2 years of free identity Protection Services and is recommending that all of its postpaid customers change their PIN. The investigation is ongoing. T-Mobile, which is based in Bellevue, Washington, became one of the country's largest cell phone service carriers along with AT&T and Verizon after buying Sprint. So... 34% of all telecom customers... Rad says, I know you're allowed to push internet packets over ham. You aren't allowed to encrypt. If they're over open up bands for public use, there already are. It's, if you want to do, oh, you mean data channels. I'm not aware of it being open for data channels. But if you don't want to get licensed, you can do things like Citizens Band or FRS, although, those are different. The ham bands, yeah, you're not allowed to encrypt. You're allowed to encode, but you're not allowed to encrypt. Basically, it comes down to they need to be able to identify who's broadcasting. Broadcasting's the wrong term. Somebody's going to get mad at me. Transmitting. There are amateur radio-based Wi-Fi mesh networks, though. And that's mostly done by modifying commercial Wi-Fi gear. So there is stuff like that. It's, again, mostly for emergency services because there's just not the bandwidth there to use it for general internet. But I've been playing with some digital modes on mine that are interesting, but the speeds are, 8-bit machine on a modem speeds because not so much because the radios can't do it. It's more that the FCC has, character rate limits and stuff in play. So it is kind of fun tuning the radio and hearing, the same sounds your modem used to make when you dial AOL. Yeah. But just build a ham station that's a node and let that be the backup internet. Yeah, there's things like that. I want to play around with an idea I had because there's some open source software for Linux to let you encode things into RIDI, which is a old school text mode. And apparently RIDI BBSs are a thing. And I think the BBS model makes much more sense on radio than it does than internet models. So some stuff I want to play with there, but haven't gotten anywhere near. Luckily I have, plenty of time. So sorry. Anyways, distracted. You guys have anything on that?
No, I'm good.
All right.
No, I'm good.
Last article, because of course we have to talk about it. It's from the BBC. BMW introduces new heated seat subscriptions in the UK.
Fuck BMW.
Yeah. A monthly heated steering wheel subscription. Wait, steering wheel. A monthly heated steering wheel subscription costs 10 euros. Subscriptions have been available for features on BMW cars for some time in the UK, but the heated seat offer started this month. The company says customers can enable all the hardware features for a one-time payment if they prefer. The features are available via BMW's Connected Drive online store and are activated remotely with no need to visit a dealer. So if you swap the controller chip in one of these cars so that you don't have to pay the subscription, is BMW going to sue you for piracy?
That's what I'm starting to think, dude. But fuck this life by subscription, man.
I bought the car. I own everything in the car. Fuck BMW.
Yep.
The heated seat offer is available in the UK, but the subscriptions that are available vary by country. The manufacturer told the BBC that, quote, where heated seats or any feature available in the Connected Drive store has been purchased when a customer vehicle is ordered, no subsequent subscription or payment is necessary, unquote. But the company argues that the ability to add new features can be helpful for owners who change their minds after a purchase. Okay, it keeps going on there. But the thing here is, so what BMW is doing is, if you didn't order the heated seats or, whatever other feature when you bought the car, they're putting it in the car anyways so that they can charge you the subscription later. and it's just not an activated feature. IBM does the same. It was doing the same thing a few years back with the mainframe servers, where you'd have extra processors in the machine, and if you went and paid IBM a couple $1,000, you'd get the code to unlock them if you needed more cycles for however long. What that really means is that the hardware is cheap enough that they're just putting it in every car, and it's just whether or not you paid them for it. Because it's cheap enough that they're assuming that there's going to be people who never pay for it. And again, I'm thinking you grab a Raspberry Pi Pico and you patch that shit in and you get what, get what's in your car. You know, fuck this, subscribe to shit that's already in the car. Like, if it was like a data service where it's pulling in information and filling out the GPS with traffic data, something where there's an infrastructure to maintain on the other end, but it's not. It's literally our controller can talk to it, our server over the internet. Your car can talk to our server over the internet, so we're going to use that to charge you for features or shut it off if you don't. That's a fuck you if I've ever heard one.
Yeah.
And
Brat says, ask John Deere if B&W would sue. Yeah, yeah, I see your point. Go ahead, Matt. Yeah. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to step on you there.
Oh, it's no problem. And now I'm thinking there's going to be a market for encrypting your car so your dealer can't talk to it.
Well, I mean, Brat's has already predicted the other market of showing the ads on the infotainment screen there.
Oh, fuck that shit.
Just in the middle of listening to your radio, an ad starts playing on the screen and playing over the speakers, pausing whatever you're doing. It's like, you miss your GPS turn because you didn't click on the, you didn't drink your verification can of Mountain Dew or whatever the fuck. There's a reference. That was a green text, wasn't it? The Mountain Dew verification can?
I think so.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Anyways, that's all I got. Of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Pure Decking every Thursday. The Galaxy 15 radio site. And in the IRC tonight, CyberLard, Cycros, Haratz, Madman, myself, and the Soylent Bomb. I didn't have a dojo myself, but we're going to say AAMP for that, and I'll put that link in the notes. Madman, closing thoughts.
I believe if you buy a car, you bought all the features in that car. This whole subscription model is fucking bullshit. It's going to cost them customers. I hope it costs them customers. I guess I have to say that. People can put up with a bunch of shit, but I hope it costs them customers.
I'm afraid it won't. I mean, I wasn't planning on buying a BMW anytime soon anyways, just because, they're expensive. But... are you closing thoughts?
I'm starting to wish I didn't go down the rabbit hole of this plane accident reading about right now. There really needs to be competency tests for air mechanics. I'm just saying.
I think there are.
Diversity is our strength, right?
Attention, attention. There is no cause for alarm.
Sorry.
I know people have gotten certified for that. I mean, you have to take tests.
Not if you come from certain countries where you may be able to go, you're racist if you don't give me the job. Because it's looking like this is how this plane crashed. They needed diversity high on the team. Somebody wasn't competent.
Fuck the planet. The entire fucking planet.
I changed the opening joke. The original joke was going to be, take a break from the politics every once in a while so you don't get numb to the stupid. And I changed it because it felt different. It felt better with how we opened it. But I'm kind of thinking that would be a good way to close it. So... Yeah, don't get numb to the stupid. It's take a break every once in a while so you can, stop and recognize, nope, they don't know better than me. They're just idiots.
Good point.
Yeah. All right. Let's close it out.
We're sorry. sorry. Your call cannot be completed as dialed.
Sounds good, no doubt, and call tonight.
Shut up, Wesley.